जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमदिष्टवाइन ग्रेसे श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। And if you don't mind, can you open the windows and turn on the fans, please? Just have to open the window. Oh. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Text 67. Adrushtam Ashrutam Chatra क्वचिन् मनसि दृश्यते यथा तथानुमन्तव्यम् देशकालक्रियाश्रयम् अदृष्टम् अश्रुतम् चात्र क्वचिन् मनसि दृश्यते यथा तथानुमन्तव्यम् देशकाल क्रियाश्रयम्। अदृष्टम् अश्रुतम् छात्रा अदृष्टम अश्रुतम छात्रा क्वचन मनसि दृश्यते यथा तथा मंतव्यम देश काल क्रियाशयम। लेडीज प्लीज। अदृष्टम अश्रुतम छात्रा Adrushtam, never experienced. Ashrutam, never heard. Cha, add. Atra, in this life. Kvachit, at some time. Manasi, in the mind. Drushyate, is visible. Yatha, as. Tatha, accordingly. Anumantavyam, to be understood. Desha, place. Kala, time. Kriya, activity. Ashrayam, depending on. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya. Sometimes in a dream, we see something never experienced or heard of in this life. But all these incidents have been experienced at different times, in different places, and in different conditions. Purport. In the previous verse, it was explained that in dreams, we see that which was experienced during the day. But why is it that we sometimes in our dreams see what we have never heard of or seen at any time during this life? Here it is stated that even though such events may not be experienced in this life, they were experienced in previous lives. According to time and circumstance, they combine so that in dreams we see something wonderful that we have never experienced. For instance, we may see an ocean on the peak of a mountain, or we may see that the ocean has dried up. These are simply combinations of different experiences in time and space. Sometimes we see a golden mountain, and this is due to our having experienced gold and mountains separately. In the dream, under illusion, we combine these separate factors. In this way, we are able to see golden mountains or stars during the day. The conclusion is that these are all mental concoctions, although they have actually been experienced in different circumstances. They have simply combined together in a dream. This fact is further explained in the following verse. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobheshtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I just received news that Bhakta Jerry has left his body. Apparently yesterday he opened his eyes and came back to external consciousness. But just now Mataji informed, I don't know any of the details, but just that He left his body. This morning? Huh? 20 minutes ago. We offer our prayers and best wishes that whatever devotional service was rendered, we be fully available as opportunities, whatever that next situation or destination might be. Transmigration of the soul from one circumstance to another circumstance is a natural fact of life. In its pure condition, the soul doesn't have to transmigrate. It is eternal, fully cognizant, and blissful. There is no need for the material body. However, because of what we say, bahirmukha, or turning away from the relationship with God, with Krishna, having turned away, the soul is given a material body to fulfill his desires, or to give an opportunity to fulfill his desires. And along with the material body, he is given the material atmosphere. And if you have observed, the material atmosphere works exactly opposite to all the things that we desire. Meaning, the material atmosphere is designed in such a way that it seems like our desires are being fulfilled, but actually our desires are being frustrated. It's like a little play. We're given something and it's taken away. We're given something, it's taken away. Whatever it is. Some things of this world, money, name, fame, very good looking body, great intelligence. I'm picking up from where we left off yesterday, Jai Jagannath Prabhu. Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shri. We are given these things. A good birth, some knowledge, intelligence, wealth or some opulence, and some beauty, bodily beauty. But they're all taken away. In the end, or as Prabhupada says, in the ultimate issue, everything is taken away. The problem that arises is because we've received something, we very quickly hold on to it, thinking this is mine. And as soon as we think this is mine, but by nature those things have to be taken away, there is this tension. And that tension is called attachment. However, it doesn't matter how strong one is, physically or intellectually or mentally, however strong, even philosophically, what always wins is material energy. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya duratya. The only method by which one can overcome the power or the force of the material energy is to be sheltered at Krishna's lotus feet. Mameva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. In fact, sometimes a person thinks that I am detached, and that's the illusion by which he is attached to this world. Narada Muni says, they think that they're very intelligent, but avishuddha buddhaya, their intelligence is not completely purified. The material energy makes them think, yes, you're so detached. That's right. You're so detached that you can see everything philosophically. You can philosophize the whole thing, all the phenomena. In fact, you're liberated. Vimukta manina. Manina means to think. And that's connected here because We've been talking about what is manodharma, riding the chariot of the mind. Different people ride the chariot of the mind in different ways. Some ride the chariot of the, because there are different brands of chariots. There is the Volkswagen, there is the Toyota, there is the Lexus, there's the Mercedes. Some people have Boeing chariot that travel very fast all over the place. Lockheed Martin, it's the rocket designers. And so these chariots, by these chariots, different people travel differently. For some materialists, they're riding on this chariot is all these plans, materialistic plans of how they will become very well established in this very uncertain material energy. So they have many predictive models. They try to predict how best can I bring about certainty in a very uncertain atmosphere. Then there are other persons who drive the chariot in a different way. They say, oh, all these materialistic things. We don't pursue all these gross things. We pursue the subtle things. Art, music, poetry, like that. They have a different chariot that they ride. And they live in this mental sphere of life. You know, you've seen certain poets or people. They don't care how they're a little unkempt. They're always into some poetry, something, different world, artists. Still, they're also riding a chariot. Then there are the philosophers who are on the intellectual platform, above all of this. They try to distinguish why things happen. They try to come to rationalize ethics and morality and what's the right thing to do, what are the principles to live by. That's a different chariot. Anything that's not in relation to Krishna or not coming in parampara, like 2 days ago Narada Muni said, listen to me because I'm speaking as an authority. Anything that's not on the basis of authority is just another chariot. Fast or slow or spiffy or clunky. That's a chariot nevertheless. Yaha shastra vidim utsarajya vartate kamakarata. That chariot never reaches its destination. Sana siddhim avapnoti. There is no purpose of riding that chariot except for a pleasure excursion. And in that excursion, sometimes we say, well, I'm just going out for a ride. I want to go down the scenic route. At least down the scenic route, there is some pleasure. But Krishna says, for such a chariot that drives on no authority, no guidance from scripture or guru, it never reaches a perfect destination, no sukham. Nor is the ride a joyful ride. It's a bumpy ride. And by the way, one can never achieve by that chariot the ultimate destination. What is the use of riding a chariot if you're not going anywhere? Someone sits on a plane. Yes, sir, where would you like to go? Just nowhere. Just like to fly around. I like to fly around. Where would you like to go? No, I just like to drive around. I just want to aimlessly walk around. There is always a goal. There cannot be life without a goal. In fact, one of the goals of this is, I just want to wander. That's a goal. So among all these goals, there has to be an ultimate goal as to who am I. Without this, here Narada Muni says, one will come up with all sorts of concoctions and different ideas on what life is all about. And those ideas come about by one's mental makeup. And the mental makeup is what continues from one life to another life. Sometimes we think, I saw something that I've never experienced before. Narada says, no, you've always, each one of us has experienced. There is nothing that we can envision that we have not experienced. So Prabhupada says, we have experienced in our previous lives, in different places, in different circumstances, at different times, different bodies that we've been in. And whatever the mind brings out for us, although seems imaginative, is actual experience. This should tell us that we are limited, that we cannot imagine something that we have not experienced. The sound vibration of the transcendental person, the saintly person, we can imagine, we can experience certain things on the basis of that sound vibration, because it's an experience. For example, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Dashashwamedha Ghat is instructing Rupa Goswami, he said to Rupa Goswami, as you hear, you will realize everything. In the conditioned state, we are not realizing as we are hearing. We are storing it. We are using our intelligence to store this information. We say knowledge. And it becomes an experience when we apply that knowledge in a practical way. However, there is another realm of hearing, the hearing that Parikshit Maharaj is experiencing, the hearing that Rupa Goswami at Dashashwamedha Ghat, in fact, for that matter, the hearing that even our king, Prachina Barhi, is experiencing. As the saintly person is speaking, they're realizing. This is the potency of the speaker and the sincerity of the receiver. So the experience is there. We will see King Prachina Barishat becomes completely detached from all his worldly duties and worldly designations and sets himself on the transcendental path. So in our case, by sadhana bhakti, the experience is through application. Outside of devotional service, all the things that we experience are past experiences. Sometimes we dream of them. Sometimes we imagine certain things that we have never seen. Here Prabhupada gives the example, an ocean on top of a mountain. There is nothing like this in this world. Or a golden mountain. It's only imaginative that there are movies about it. There's a golden mountain. Actually, there's a very popular movie about it. Or that, here Prabhupada says, that the ocean has dried up. These things don't exist, but our mind brings it up. So here Narada Muni is clearing out that it is not that the mind has the capacity to create something that doesn't exist already. What it has the capacity is that it can mix pictures to make it look something different. We have experience of an ocean, we may have experience of a desert. But to think that the ocean has dried up is a composite picture that the mind can put together. We may have seen gold, we may have seen mountain peaks, and the mind can put that together and show us a golden mountain. We may be flying over the ocean just by flapping our hands. That's our picture, but we've never done. We cannot do that. No human being can do that. In some form of life, we might have been a bird and we were flying somewhere. Why is this important to know? In the whole set of verses, Narada Muni is just giving us one lesson. Actually, this is a strong case that he's making for the transmigration of the soul. Some people might ask, well, how do you know? How do you know that the soul transmigrates? But here from a realized person is giving us the mechanics of transmigration. Not just this is what you think and then the soul goes into another body. But he's telling us that there is continuity. We see life as very discrete. Very, very discrete. Yeah. One life. I was born and I will die. And outside of these two events, nothing exists that I can imagine. What happens? Like, why was I born? With what experience was I born? And after death, what happens? So different people come up with different imaginative ideas of what happens after death, or why birth happens, or when birth happens. There are certain persons who profess that birth actually happens. Life begins when the child is born from the womb of the mother. There are some persons who say, no, by the 18th week in the gestation period, when the embryo is 18 weeks old or 8 weeks old, the first heartbeat shows up. That's when life begins. So it depends on which camp one is. Those who are in the pro-choice camp, they say it's after birth, after the baby comes out of the womb. So before that you can abort, because there is no life. The pro-life people say, no, first 8 weeks, you can, heartbeat is there. So you cannot abort. But nobody can explain, pro-life or pro-choice, you cannot explain why in a particular family a particular child is born and how that happens. Most people are very good at describing the what, like what is happening. Very few people can describe how. So through biology and all this powerful microscopes, they can say the sperm traveled and fertilized the egg. To some extent, that's the how. Really, that's really not the mechanics of how. But nobody can describe why. Even the how is not well defined. How is it that the whole chromosome structure begins? How is it that this whole DNA molecules, they all get together, the proteins, how is it that it happens? Oh, it happens like this. They can describe what. They really cannot describe the how so well, and they definitely cannot describe why. Narada Muni is describing the why. This is the gold mine of information or knowledge that Narada Muni is giving us. It's the why. Karmatmakam. Rishabhdev gives us like a principle. Karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. That when the mind is full of fruit of desires, karmatmakam, the consequence is sharira bandha. He is to be bound in a body. Narada Muni is giving us the details, the how and the why. Why someone is born in a particular family? What's their previous baggage look like? Because according to King Prachina Barhisha, it's a very logical question. Body changes, and the change is so distinct. Then how can karma from a previous life show up in this life? The body is completely changed. I'm a human being into an animal body. How does karma get transferred? And the how is through the subtle body. And the carrying agent is the mind. And the mind is full of these desires. So we heard yesterday, these desires get activated by the agency of time. When they are fully activated, they are called prarabdha karma. And what is yet to come is called aprarabdha. Like that. So with the agency of time, through one body, all these fruitive reactions, they all manifest. And all of this is put into the category of papa, sin. Generally we think, you know, there's definition. What is sin? It has to be some gross activity, sin. You have to murder somebody, you have to be completely intoxicated, or you have to kidnap someone or rape someone, and that's all sin. But if you give someone charity, that's not sinful. This is not proper definition, actually. Bhagavad Gita shows us through the modes of material nature that one who acts according to the modes of nature is sinful. I mean, that's such a far-reaching definition that it covers everybody in that. It covers all the persons in the mode of goodness into sinful life. Because mode of goodness may be cultivation of finer qualities of worldly nature. That is also considered sinful. Why? Any activity by which we get another body, the Bhagavad Gita says this is sinful. So human life is meant to understand what quality of activities must I perform that is completely transcendental. And this, even the great personalities, Krishna says, not very clear on. Kavayo api atra mohitaha. What is to be done? What is not to be done? Even great thinkers are confused about it. So who knows? Narada Muni knows. So Narada Muni says, authority knows. So whose authority? Narada Muni and the disciplic succession. And the disciplic succession will always give us, now I'm using disciplic succession in sort of an impersonal manner. It means guru and the sadhus and the Vaishnavas. Regardless of situation, they will always give us instruction that will help us act in a transcendental sort of manner. Not sort of, will help us act in a transcendental manner. In every circumstance, it is always in relation to Krishna. How is this going to affect in relation to Krishna? That thought that they put into us is what makes our activities transcendental. Is this helpful for us on a day-to-day basis? Yes, very helpful. Because we come up with imaginations. I was thinking about it in the past 1 week, we've been talking about this topic. Sometimes we even imagine, oh, I would like to spread Krishna consciousness like that. Have these big, massive festivals. 70, 80, 100,000 people will come. And we have a picture of it too. And that's just the mind giving us a picture of some other event that has happened. Woodstock. We see the picture and we see Prahlad Prabhu dancing on stage, and then we just transpose our picture and also, and everyone's clapping. Yeah, I want to spread Krishna consciousness like that. Or something, oh, I imagine myself nicely in sitting by Radha Kund. No need for all this followers and all this management, just by Radha Kund, chanting. And one day I will see the bridge that Mother Janava also sees. It's possible. This is imagination. In fact, even sitting at Janava Baitak, Is there a bridge? I see it. Something. This is also chariot. It's a little different chariot, but it's a chariot nevertheless. So one may ask, I'm digressing a little bit, one may ask, is there no room for what is called initiative in Krishna consciousness? No, there is a lot of room for initiative. Not imaginative initiative or imagined initiative. Our initiative comes from defined service. If a service is given, then there is initiative of how to improve it. And that initiative is always checked, you know, or confirmed. by the spiritual master that, yeah, this is a proper track for you to go. Or, you know, one phrase that I keep hearing, you know, so many times, keep it simple. But, you know, we may have some imagined idea of how we want to do that service. It may not be necessary at this time. So this mind is a very tricky fellow. And all it has, or he has, since we're giving it a gender, he or she has, is all these things stored from the previous experiences. And the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to get rid of it. Chetodarpana marjanam is to get rid of all the imaginative ideas that it has. Or all the past pictures of life, of experience. We call them conceptions. Mostly misconceptions. So Chetodarpana marjanam is that by the agency of the holy name, by chanting, by being in Krishna's presence through chanting of the holy name, those pictures are being systematically eliminated from our consciousness. But we are not Mayavadis. We don't want to have a clean slate. A clean slate is a dangerous slate because anybody can write on it. We want Guru, Sadhu and Shastra to write on that clean slate of our mind. We want them to write for us instructions. We want them to write for us jewels of their realization. Then the transmigration ends. Otherwise, from this life, we carry more, we pick up more conceptions and we store them. And nowadays, storage has become very cheap, I believe. Right? We can get a 3 terabyte hard drive in less than $50, maybe $100. Because storage progressively is becoming cheaper. And the mind is a fantastic storehouse. And so, as we store these pictures and conceptions, transmigration will continue. Because what we store today, that's what we heard a few days ago, what we store today becomes an action tomorrow. The analogy used was the fermentation brings up little air bubbles, and that bubble travels to the surface of the what of the river or ocean, and poof, and another bubble comes. So this fermentation is that we pass through life and we carry all these conceptions. And the conception is coming from Bahirmukha. Same things like was spoken yesterday. There is avidya, false ego, intelligence, mind, and we capture. So we should be careful to not pick up a conception about life from anywhere outside of Guru Sadhu Shastra paradigm. Even if we pick it up, we may not act on it today, but it gets stored. Someday, it will show up. And we might follow it. So the process of Krishna consciousness is a very well-defined, clean-cut process that we avoid conceptions outside of Guru Sadhu Shastra, so that the mind doesn't present all these pictures. Okay, any thoughts, comments? Yeah, Himanshu Prabhu.
I had two questions. My first question had to do with the word, with the use of the word sinful. You were describing how anything that leads, is your knee okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Sorry. You were describing that anything that leads to another body is considered sinful. Yeah. And I was thinking generally, when we're speaking with devotees, we use this word pious when we're describing people who are not devotees, but they have these pious qualities, they're charitable. And so generally the idea is there's sinful activity, there's pious activity, and there's transcendental activity. But you're presenting this picture that actually anything that is not transcendental is sinful. So is... I was wondering if you could clarify that a little bit more. And I had a second question I'll ask you after this.
Okay. Prabhupada quotes this verse again and again from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhadra Bhadra. That people think in terms of pious and impious. Actually both are impious. Or we were hearing in the car the other day, people think of in terms of dharma and adharma. And Prabhupada was describing that the so-called dharma that people talk about is also adharma. From the vantage point of a transcendental person, whether one is shackled by a golden chain or an iron chain, is it better? One is better than the other? No, both are shackles. But people are caught up in the, oh, I have a golden shackle, look at you. You have only an iron shackle. And from a transcendental perspective, both are shackled. So by pious activity you get a golden shackle and by impious activity you get an iron shackle. But shackle nevertheless. So Krishna describes, Shubha Shubha Phalai Revam Mukshase Karma Bandhane in the 9th chapter. That by proper execution of devotional service, you're freed of Shubha and of Shubha Phala. So, in that context, sinful.
Thank you. My second question had to do with what you were explaining at the end of the class. You were saying that any conception that our mind carries that hasn't been etched on there by Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, we should know to be something, you know, the chariot of the mind. So, I was thinking, you know, first of all, it's when you read Prabhupada's purport, there's so much practical advice in there, actually. But somehow I'm not able to retain a lot of that information. So as I go through my day, it's not like I'm acting based on what I read in Prabhupada's books. And also, yeah, it just seems very difficult. Like it seems like then every activity you do has to be connected to something you heard or something you read. And I just don't feel like my mind has that capacity to carry so much knowledge right now.
That's too difficult because what is the purpose of what we do is that we don't, it's not that by our hearing our mind is somehow like a storehouse of all these details. Some details we'll remember, some details we can't because our capacity to remember is not there. But what this means is that our life is guided by the right principles or devotional principles versus some other principles. You know, as we're going about, we're speaking nicely to others, let's say. Why? Because it's nice to speak to people nicely? Or is it because they're parts and parcels of Krishna? What's the principle that's guiding our activity? That is what is... interestingly, it's just we're just acting on impulse. So we have to move, the idea of moving from sadhana to spontaneous stage, that spontaneity is on the basis of devotional principles. Today we are spontaneous on the basis of other principles also. So let spiritual, devotional principles guide us. That's what we are practicing. Details may change, may look different for different people. It's the principle that's important. Yes, Glenn?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. It's pretty clear to me how my mind can be my enemy, but it's not so clear to me how my mind can be my friend. And what
Savai
agency...
Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo. That's the description Prabhupada gives us. The mind has desires. It's the storehouse of desires. So the mind is a friend when the desires are to serve Krishna. In the conditioned state, it's hard to realize that the mind is our friend. It's hard to realize that. However, the Bhagavad Gita says that the mind is a friend, or can be a friend. If the desires that we cultivate are devotional, then our mind helps us rise to a higher level of consciousness. So it depends on what desires we're cultivating. So even in devotional life, if a person cultivates some other desires, then they will struggle with the mind. We usually call it mental platform. Person is hovering on the mental platform. This is a phrase we learn. First thing we learn, Prabhu, don't be mental. We learn to say it to others. I mean, that's what we learn first. Don't be mental means make all calculations of Krishna consciousness on the basis of mind. Versus on the basis of instructions from devotees, guru. Or another way is, when the circumstances are nice, my enthusiasm is right there. When the circumstances are really not favorable, my enthusiasm tanks completely. Today it's too hot, today it's too cold, today I'm hungry, today I'm tired. But when everyone says, what a wonderful devotee you are, Prabhu, special expression of Krishna consciousness. It's all on the chariot of the mind. Not that we don't need appreciation or encouragement, that's not my point. But our devotional service that goes up and down according to circumstances, that is mental. Nobody appreciates me, so what's the use of doing any service? That's the mind. For example. Yeah? Okay. Online.
This is an internet question.
Is there a name to the person?
Krishna Rao.
Krishna Rao. Okay. Krishna. Yeah, we know him.
Yeah. Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Yeah. What is the definition of Shastra in this age? Is it only texts like the Bhagavatam, Gita, etc.? Or does it include books written by Vaishnavas these days?
The Sanskrit definition of Shastra is that which disciplines, or that which guides. And so the definition of what is Shastra is, yes, definitely it is the Bhagavad Gita as it is, nothing else, and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the acharyas, whatever they have written, acharyas in disciplic succession, whatever they have written also falls within Shastra. As they say, what's the one of the phrase for the offenses against the holy name? To consider the fourth offense. To blaspheme the Vedic literatures or literatures pursuing or in pursuance of the Vedic principles. From a very etymological definition, Shastra has two main branches. One is called Shruti, and the other is called Smriti. Shruti is that which originates from Krishna directly. Those are the four Vedas. Bhagavad Gita falls within that. Then the Smritis are compilations of the principles from Shruti that can be done by the sages. These are the Upanishads, the Puranas. They fall in the Smriti section. However, I mean, the Upanishad is already in the Vedas, sorry. So the Upanishad and the Vedas, they are the Shrutis. The Smritis are all the Puranas, and there are the different sections to it. But everything is considered Shastra. As long as the conclusion is Vedaishcha Sarvair Ahameva Vedya, then that is proper knowledge. So it's considered Shastra. Now, from a practical perspective, because Krishna Rao is asking, and we know Krishna Rao, although within Sampradaya everything is Shastra, you can't mix the Shastra from one Sampradaya into another Sampradaya. The conclusions are all the same, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the path to perfection is devotional service, all of that is consistent, but you cannot mix principles from one Sampradaya into another Sampradaya. That means, can you have like a salad bar of Shastra? No. You cannot. Because the moods are different and you can't mix the moods. When you mix the moods, you lose taste for either of them. And recently we had a conversation, so it's on a broader basis. When we make a plate of prasadam, there is rice and matar paneer. That's our favorite example, right? Rice and matar paneer. And that's very nice taste. If you pour sweet rice on top of that, although by sweet rice by itself is very nice, very tasty, luscious, delicious, you pour sweet rice on top of matar paneer, you can't enjoy the sweet rice, you can't enjoy the matar paneer. The moods are different. Like that. Can't mix both. The principles are the same, both are prasadam, like that. Is that all right, Krishna Rao? Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much for being with us. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.